Can you explain to us what's really going on in the streets?
There were 17 gangs in Los Angeles that were engaged in follow home robberies. So you could rape an unconscious woman and the law considers that a nonviolent, non-serious offense. They didn't tell the voters that when they voted on it. You can engage in human trafficking of someone 18 or older, nonviolent, non-serious offense, which has made LA County the capital of the United States of human trafficking. There are no consequences for a lot of those actions I just described. It changes the way you live your life in LA County.
My guest today is Nathan Huckman, former federal prosecutor and defense attorney. Today, he'll tell us why the crime has been on the rise in the last decade in Los Angeles, and he's going to offer some ideas how the prosecutors can deal with the rising crime.
The LA County jails can hold up to about 18,000 prisoners. Right now, they have about just under 13,000, but about 40% of that population is homeless. 70% of them are suffering from a serious mental illness, a substance abuse disorder, addiction, or both. 50% of the people who are going to be released will be back in a jail or prison within 2 years. One of the programs that I'm a big champion of is called The Last Mile. What it does, it teaches coding skills to prisoners. The recidivism rate for The Last Mile is less than 1%.
Wow.
Proving that prison actually can help people get back on track.
I'm Siamak Karami. Welcome to California Insider. Nathan, it's great to have you on. Welcome.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much for inviting me.
You know, we want to talk to you about LA. There's a phenomenon that you had told us that LA jails, LA County jails right now are the biggest homeless shelter in the country. Can you explain to us?
Yes. The LA County jails can hold up to about 18,000 prisoners. Right now, they have about just under 13,000, but about over 40% of that population is homeless. So if you do the quick numbers, you know, that's roughly at least over 5,000 people today are sitting in the LA County jails and have no home. They estimate that about 70% of them are suffering from a serious mental illness, a substance abuse disorder, addiction, or both. And quite candidly, the LA County jails are not set up to be dealing with either one of those situations.
And how does it work? Do they get arrested and do they go there and come out?
Well, it's a combination. A lot of these people have been arrested and they're waiting for their trial, or sometimes they've already been sentenced, and that part of their punishment is to be in the jails themselves. Not actually in prisons because of the nature of the crime they committed, but in the jails themselves. Usually those jails will hold someone for basically a year or less. If you have a sentence beyond a year, you go to usually a state prison. So what you have is a situation where they've talked for years about building better facilities that would have mental health beds and mental health professionals that could actually render treatment to people while they're in these jails. Unfortunately, the Board of Supervisors has not approved the plans that have been there for over 10 years to actually build this facility. So these people languish or effectively are warehoused in the LA County jails, not receiving the treatment that they need, so that when they get out, they'll either go back to their substance abuse addiction or continue to be seriously mental ill. So again, if you have, for instance, a drug addiction, you might have gotten cleaned up, you know, for the time you're in the jails, assuming you didn't get access to your drugs, but no one's given you the sort of rehabilitation treatment to really deal with your drug addiction. So now you're back on the streets, back in the same areas that you were in before when you had the drug addiction, and it's not a shock that over 50% of the people who are going to be released will be back in a jail or prison within 2 years.
We have had some people on the show that were gang members and they dealt in the homeless encampments. And they told us that the homeless encampments are living by different set of rules. Can you explain to us what's really going on in the streets?
The homeless encampments are incredibly dangerous places. I mean, murders occur there, thefts, robberies, the ability, it's literally a survival mechanism in a homeless encampment. So the rules of survival are pretty much what apply, as opposed to the rules that you and I might live by on a daily basis. You know, the rules are decided by who wants to enforce the rules. If you have your stuff there, you guard your stuff. And if someone wants your stuff, it's not like people are calling the police or going to court to resolve their differences. They resolve them right then and there. So to consign people to homelessness and not to spend the time and the effort to try and get them off the streets, whether it's permanent or temporary housing, and as importantly, get them the services that they need to deal with their underlying condition, you're condemning these homeless to basically a third world existence. It's very dangerous, very inhumane, and we got to do everything in our power to end it.
What do you think is the root cause of us not being able to deal with it? And we hear that the numbers are going up and up and up.
Well, let me deal with something that I'm personally involved with, which is the DA aspect of it, the law enforcement aspect of it. Because if you can start eliminating the crimes that are occurring in these homeless encampments, then you hopefully can allow the social services to step in and deal with these people and their underlying conditions. If you take a hands-off approach, or you're just thinking like somehow this is going to resolve itself, what you see is that more and more homeless come to Southern California because they understand that's the approach. They will go where it's easiest to exist, where they'll get free food, where the police won't bother them, where they can do their drugs 24/7. People have joked around that some of these homeless encampments is like Coachella 24/7, where you basically can just, you know, get high and wasted during the day, sleep it off whenever you can, scrounge around for food or money, get your drugs again, then repeat the process over and over and over. Because of the addition of fentanyl into the drug supply, and fentanyl is an incredibly both an addictive and lethal drug. 2 milligrams of fentanyl will kill you in 2 minutes. It's now been inserted into fake pills, whether it's Oxycontin, Adderall, Percocet, Xanax, marijuana, cocaine, ecstasy, methamphetamine, heroin. And basically, they estimate 6 to 7 people will die today in LA County from a fentanyl overdose. So if you leave these people on the street long enough, and you don't have enough Narcan to revive all the people who are dying, the homeless situation will in some way start to decrease at some point because enough people will actually die from overdoses or living on the streets or the violence that occurs in homeless encampments. So again, the idea that we can take a hands-off approach and just hope that this stuff resolves itself is a form of insanity.
Can you explain to us what you mean by the hands-off approach?
So the way a DA's office works is the DA should only be resolving cases based on 2 things, the facts and the law. So the law enforcement, for instance, sees someone in a homeless encampment engaged in drug dealing or using a whole variety of
drugs. Which is very common now. We are
very common. These are all violations of the law. If the DA's office says up front that they will not prosecute someone for using, let's say, methamphetamine or heroin, then law enforcement basically will walk by seeing someone using methamphetamine and heroin right in front of their faces and walk by and continue walking because the DA's office is no longer doing its job. I can change that. I'm running for DA for LA County, and if you let law enforcement know that the DA will do its job and prosecute these cases, then law enforcement will arrest people who are engaged in these crimes. And it's not just one time they're doing it, 2 times, they're doing it every day. And eventually they're doing it to the point where either they will die or the situation around them will create a violent situation. You know, someone will be dealing with a drug dealer. You talked about gangs before. Gangs make a huge amount of money on homeless encampments because that's where they're selling the drugs. You know, we've got a human trafficking problem in Los Angeles, which has made LA County the capital of the United States of human trafficking. That's basically people being used as sex slaves, or a whole variety of different things. And again, the only way to really deal with that is to set the lines very, very fair, very consistent, very impartially, and tell these folks, if you cross the lines, there are consequences for their actions. What I mean by hands off is that the DA has literally said out loud and put in writing, there are no consequences for a lot of those actions I just described. So law enforcement won't arrest, and the people can keep going and going and going until they've either hurt someone or they're dead.
We have also been told the laws have changed in California and they're not as strict as before. How much of it is the loss? How much of it is the DA?
It's a combination. And let me give you an example. 2014, just 10 years ago, was considered one of our safest years in the last 50 years. All the trend lines for all the different crimes were going in the downward direction, the correct direction. But in the last 10 years, what we had is that we did have that change in the law. You changed starting back in 2014 with Proposition 47. They called it the Safe Neighborhoods and Schools Act. And who wouldn't want to vote for that? It sounds pretty enticing. The problem is, what it did is it basically took a whole variety of drug crimes, including the most serious drugs, methamphetamine, heroin, fentanyl, and instead of them being felonies, which could have you end up in state prison, they all became misdemeanors. Then George Gascon shows up, and he says, I'm not going to prosecute misdemeanors at all. So we used to have drug courts in LA County and throughout California. What a drug court was is if someone got arrested for, let's say, using heroin, they had an option. They could either go to state prison or they could go through an 18-month rehabilitation program. Very rigorous. You get urine tested in this program. You have to go to AA meetings. If you slip up, you get one, I think maybe even two slip ups, but if by the time you have a third one, you're out of the program, you're going to state prison. And that hammer of going to state prison was enough to get hundreds of people to complete this 18-month program. And I went to one of the graduations of someone whose family had given up on them. They thought they were just consigned to a life on the street and drug addiction until they were dead. And all of a sudden, after 18 months, this person was clean and sober. They had a job. They were part of society. They were part of their family again. But what happened is, when you got rid of these laws that were basically created the hammer for to get these people into the drug courts, they're not interested in the drug courts anymore. Because if you could do 2 days in county jail or an 18-month program that's rigorous and difficult, you're choosing the 2 days in county jail.
So they go to jail if they get there. Even if they do a misdemeanor, would they go to jail? But we've heard that they don't even go to jail.
That's what I'm saying, is that when Proposition 47 turned the felonies into misdemeanors, then even if you were to arrest them right now, they could, depending on how many felonies they get arrested for, they could go
how
to jail.
How many misdemeanors?
Misdemeanors, but not a lot. Not enough to drive them into the drug court program. So what's happening right now in November is there'll be a new proposition on the ballot for people to vote on. They call it the Fix 47 proposition. The formal name is like the Homelessness, Drug Addiction, and Retail Theft Reduction Act. And what it's going to do is go after the repeat offenders. So if you get, you know, arrested once for using drugs, it's not going to most likely have you go to state prison or treatment. But by the third and the fourth time, now you're treatment eligible to go into those treatment programs, or you go to state prison. And they believe that going after the repeat offenders is the most successful way to try and stem the problems that you're seeing both in the homeless world and even outside the homeless world, where drug addiction is fueling those type of crimes.
Now, the people that came up with this Prop 47 and these ideas, they thought we are putting a lot of people in prison. Do you think we did that?
One of the authors of Proposition 47 is the current DA of LA County, George Gascon. And the identification of problems in the system was correct. It's their solutions that have turned out to be a total failure as far as our safety goes. So identifying that there are problems where the prisons were having too many people, particularly people from communities of color and low-income people, for low-level offenses, I thought was actually a smart idea to identify that. For instance, in Proposition 47, one of the drugs that they turned from a felony to a misdemeanor was marijuana. And 2 years after that, they actually legalized recreational marijuana. So all those people who had ended up in prison for marijuana possession, they basically changed that law, and I think that was a smart change. Eventually, people who had convictions for marijuana possession were able to get those convictions reversed. But when it comes to the more hard drugs, the more addictive drugs, the drugs that can kill you, like fentanyl, heroin, methamphetamine, these laws have been counterproductive, particularly for the repeat offenders, because they've basically put a sign out there saying, go ahead and use drugs to your heart's content. Nobody's going to stop you. There's only two things that are going to happen when that happens. You're going to die, at some point on the street, or you're going to have to commit enough crimes because you need the money to pay the drug dealers, the gangs, for your drugs. Because your family's pretty much cut you off. You can't probably maintain a job. You're living on the streets. No one's giving you money for your drugs. So you got to steal it. Now, who are you going to steal it for? Stores. You're going to go to houses. You're going to go to people's cars, break in. I mean, because the drugs are what's driving you. It's the only thought you have in your brain. I need more drugs that day, and that costs money.
And what about the judges? We've heard that some of the judges in California are very forgiving. Is it true or not? What are your thoughts?
It's hard to classify judges as forgiving, not forgiving. If a judge is doing their job like a prosecutor, they're looking at the facts and the law for each and every case. They're trying to determine who the true threats are to public safety and need to be behind bars, and quite candidly, the ones that aren't. Your first-time nonviolent offender could very well serve their debt to society for committing a crime by community service, by probation, by a diversion program, especially if they have a drug addiction, that gives them the help if they want it and they're willing to volunteer for it versus putting them in jail. So again, I wouldn't say that there's too many judges that are lenient, too many judges that are severe. I mean, you see within each judge very often, if the argument or the person is presented in the right light, either in a harsh light or a lenient light, that judge can make a different decision. So again, I think it's up to the prosecutors to do their jobs and present the facts to the judge and let the judge ultimately make a decision based on the facts and not some political agenda that our current DA has espoused.
You mentioned overcrowding in the jails. We've talked to some sheriffs and they said, we should have made more jails and more prisons. And some other people say that some of these people were there for no reason and for very minor reasons, and then their life got worse as a result of it. They go to prison, they will learn bad things from others. What do you think roughly is the percentage of people that were there for these minor crimes that they shouldn't have been there?
Well, I can tell you today, very few, and here's why. Since 2014, we've had a situation where, again, we turned felonies into misdemeanors for certain drug and property crimes. So people who would have been going to state prison for those felonies are no longer going to state prison for the last 10 years. Then you had, that was Proposition 47. Then you had 2 years later, Proposition 57. What that did is it said that for non-serious, non-violent offenses, we're going to let even more people out of state prison. And they escalated the number of people being let out for non-serious, non-violent offenses. Part of the problem with that is what the definition turned out to be. So you could rape an unconscious woman, and the law considers that a non-violent, non-serious offense. They didn't tell the voters that when they voted on it. You can engage in human trafficking of someone 18 or older, non-violent, non-serious offense. But we let a lot of people out for that. AB 109, which is another state law, was dealing with the overcrowding issue in prisons. The way they focused on eliminating overcrowding is they sent a lot of prisoners to the local jails, but they let a lot of prisoners out. Which ones? The nonviolent, non-serious offenders.
Based on the definitions you just mentioned, right?
Correct. And there's a whole lot of other nonviolent, non-serious offenders. They include the low-level criminals as well.
And domestic violence and things like
domestic
that.
Domestic violence could be, in many situations, a nonviolent, non-serious offense. So you're letting out people who engaged in domestic abuse because of the definition of the crime. And people don't understand that these crimes, even though they seem very violent and very serious, have been defined in the law as nonviolent and non-serious. So my point, or this is a long answer to your question, is that nowadays, today, 2024, you've gotten out of the prison system a lot of the low-level offenders for the last 10 years. So what you're left in the prison system is the people who have pretty much been committing violent and serious offenses, and not just once, often multiple times. So those folks, in my view, need to serve their prison sentences. Now, hopefully they'll do a great job in prison, they'll actually rehabilitate, and I'm a huge fan of giving prisoners skill sets in prison, so when they get out, they don't go back to prison because they have a productive job that they can come to. So one of the programs that I'm a big champion of is called The Last Mile. Its website is thelastmile.org. What it does, it teaches coding skills to prisoners. It literally teaches them website design, website maintenance. So when they get out, they are actually helps them get their first job. They're very good jobs. These jobs pay $50,000 to $70,000 a year. And it turns out that while the recidivism rate, that's the rate at which people go back to prison after they get out of prison within 2 years, for LA County is over 50%. The recidivism rate for The Last Mile is less than 1%.
Wow.
Proving that prison actually can help people get back on track if
they
you
get
invest
the right training
in the programs. And The Last Mile, for instance, costs about $6,000 a year for a prisoner to give them that education and training. It costs over $120,000 a year to house a prisoner for a year. So if you want to make a smart investment, you give prisoners these skill sets while they're in prison, help them get that first job, and then hope they don't go back in the prison system ever again.
Coming back to LA, we are hearing of these repeat crimes, and retail theft is up 81%, and a lot of different kinds of crimes that are very unusual. You know, like we wouldn't hear follow home robberies, these kind of crimes that are happening. How much of it do you think is the state laws, and how much of it is the DA or police being short-staffed?
Let me focus on the DA's role. The DA's policies play a large role in there because they set the tone and the culture for what's going to be allowed and not allowed in society. So if you tell people, for instance, that in the DA, that he's not prosecuting misdemeanors against juveniles, basically anybody who's under 18, that includes this misdemeanor theft of stealing just under $950. So now you've told juveniles that if you steal just under $950, the DA's office is not going to prosecute you, which means that law enforcement, when it sees one of these cases, they're not interested in investigating it because they know the case will be declined, which then goes down to the victim level. Now, the victims are the store owners. A lot of them are small store owners, and they're watching literally their profits walk out the door as people just steal stuff. I mean, you can only put so much on your glass cabinets. But these people are coming in, stealing this stuff, and they're thinking, should I call law enforcement? Well, they've already said they're not going to bring the case because the DA's office won't do its job. Should I file an insurance claim? Well, my deductible will eat up the amount of the insurance claim, and then the insurance company will cut me off, and I'll have no insurance. So you've created a situation, a no-win situation, because of the DA's policies that starts at the district attorney level and then filters down to the law enforcement level and goes down to the victims themselves.
So the police essentially, the police pays attention to what the DA does, because if they arrest somebody but there's no consequences if the DA doesn't.
Correct. And the DA also is involved in seeing if someone is given an adequate bail. And that's what happens when you get arrested and you get charged with a crime. What is the bail that's going to assure that you show up for your next hearing and you're no longer pose a danger to the community? Right now, the current bail schedule and the current bail policies of the DA is to basically allow someone who steals, the likes of which we've been talking about, to be arrested in the morning and out by the afternoon. That's demoralizing for victims who literally watch the person who stole money, products or money from them end up in their store by the afternoon. It's demoralizing for law enforcement. They spent the time to finally arrest someone, only to see them literally released as fast as they can possibly be released. So the DA needs to do their role to make sure that these people are kept in jail where appropriate, as opposed to having a policy that says let them all out.
Now, was this surprising to you? Because to us it was surprising, because LA is a really important city in the world. It plays a big role, not just in California and US, but it's an international brand. And it was surprising to see these follow-home robberies happening. What was your thought?
Well, when I heard that there were 17 gangs in Los Angeles that were engaged in follow-home robberies, you know, it changes the way you live your life in L.A. County. You know, you want to be able to go, you know, freely, you know, go outside your house and not worry when you come back that someone literally is watching you, you know, following you home, waiting for you to open up your garage and will attack you at that moment. Or if they didn't follow you home, maybe they're already in your house, or maybe they've already been in your house while you've been gone. Or maybe before you even got to your car has been broken into. You know, the fear that people feel today is fear that they really have not felt. Because remember, 2014 was one of our safest years in the last 50 years. So people are looking at it, and 2/3 of the Los Angelinos polled said that they feel less safe today than they did when the current DA Gascon came into office in 2020. You know, it's a situation where when you fear for your safety or your family's safety, it's a fundamental part of what government should be providing to you, which is your security. And what a lot of people have done is that they've voted with their feet and they've left Los Angeles County. It wasn't the high taxes, it wasn't the traffic, the smog, the potential for earthquakes, it's fear. That if you can't go outside, your family can't go outside without feeling safe, you'll find somewhere else to do it. And a lot of people have.
We have interviewed people that had incidents where people followed them home and robbed them. And or they fought back. We had cases where people fought back. And we've had retailers here that have lost a lot of merchandise. And there are some that actually have tried to find a way to fight back. And some people think that this fear is exaggerated. You know, that somehow when we talk about this, we're talking to individuals that have been victims, and we're exaggerating this. How real is this?
So let me tell it to you both on a statistical level and on an anecdotal level. Statistically, violent crime is up every single year since compared to the year that George Gascon has come into office of 2020. In fact, 2022 had a 15-year high for homicides. Property crimes are up double digits each year, including, as you mentioned before, shoplifting being up 81% in last year alone. And that's the reported crimes. As I just explained to you, a lot of crimes, a lot of property crimes are not even being reported nowadays because the store owners know that it's almost useless to report them. And that doesn't include hate crimes, which is up over 100%. Fentanyl poisonings or murderers, I mean, that is the number one killer of 18 to 35-year-olds. In LA County and quite candidly all over California. You know, you have a situation where people aren't just fearing because they see a few images on social media. They're fearing because the statistics tell them they should fear. And everyone that I talk to, and I go up and down this county, either they have personally experienced crime, often for the first time in the last 3 years, or a family member, or a friend, or a neighbor. So it is absolutely real. And the people who tell you it's not real, I don't know where they're living in Los Angeles County. I'd love to live where they're living in Los Angeles. They must be in a bubble where somehow crime has not touched them, their neighbors, or their neighborhood. And I think that if they tell you that, find out where they're living, or at least at what street they're living on, because I would guess, for the most part, they are not telling you the truth.
Or maybe they're in some gated community that's...
But they have to leave it at some point.
Yeah.
At some point, you have to leave it. The violent criminal aspect of the homeless population has exploded in the last 3 years. We're at a record high of homeless in LA County right now. And so it's a situation where you can't avoid the product of our current DA's lenient. And what's happening is where people used to think, well, it's the homeless population in Skid Row. I don't see them. It doesn't enter my life. Or it's robberies or follow home robberies. That's other people. That's not me. Nowadays, people are actually experiencing it themselves, or again, their family or friends, and it's real. And they want change. And they want change now.
And to be fair to Mr. Gascon, we would love to have him on to talk to him as well.
But I encourage you to have him on. I encourage you to ask him every question you've asked me.
Absolutely. And then if you can explain to us, in your view, what part of his policies made the violent crime go up? How does it work for average people that don't know how it works in action? What kind of policy would cause the violent crime to go up?
Certainly. So I'll give you three examples of Gascon's policies that target violent crime that I think are the complete wrong type of policy. So in the law, there's something called an enhancement where you can get additional time in prison if you do certain things. One of them is use a gun in connection with the crime. So if you go ahead and commit a robbery, if you're a criminal, you're thinking to yourself, well, if I use the gun and I stick it in someone's face and I say, give me all your money, the chance they're going to give you all their money is a lot better than if you say, please. And so why do you not use a gun? Because you're somewhat aware that if you use a gun, there's a law out there, a gun enhancement, that will give you more years in prison if you use that gun. So it dissuades and deters people from using
guns.
How
many years, roughly?
Somewhere between 2 and 5. Or it can, if you used it more than once or more than one crime, it can go up from there. So we're talking additional years of time in jail if you use that gun. So what Gascon has done is he's told the prosecutors, we're not filing those gun enhancements under almost all circumstances. The gang enhancement. There's a gang enhancement that's been on the books for over 20 years, and prosecutors use it for gang members who commit violent crimes to, again, dissuade gang members from doing violent crimes. It creates this extra enhancement if you do it in connection with a gang. So under Gascon, he says, we're not filing that. It's too much time. Why is it too much time? He doesn't explain. And maybe he thinks it targets gangs, and gangs are predominantly made up of people of color. Well, that's okay if the gangs all of a sudden disappeared, but they haven't. They've gotten stronger, they've gotten wiser, they use technology better. And so Gascon says, we're not going to prosecute that, so the gangs understand that then now the gangs can operate freely, because operating as part of a gang, which helps you commit crime, is not going to be separately punished. And going after juveniles. In the old days, if a juvenile used a gun and killed 10 people, let's say, and they're 16 or 17, they'd be tried as an adult. So there would be no difference if a 16 or 17-year-old used the gun and killed people than if you were 18 or older. Gascon comes in and says, I'm not trying 16 and 17-year-olds as adults. What does that mean? Is that a juvenile can only be held until the age of 25 years old. Then you have to let them out. So who did the gangs give the guns to? The 16 and 17-year-olds. They're not stupid. They know that if they get caught using the gun in connection with murders, they'll be out by the age of 25. If you're 18 or older and you do the same exact crime, you might be out sometime in your 50s or 60s if you're lucky. So that is a direct connection between George Gascon's pro-criminal blanket extreme policies and how violent crime has escalated in this county.
So he's been probably doing that to help these communities to recover.
He thinks he's doing it to help these communities. But where do all those people, for the most part, who are released early from prison without skill sets, where do they end up going? Back to the communities, the low-income communities where they came. And as I mentioned before, since they have no skill sets, 50% of them will be back in prison within 2 years, committing more crimes in those communities. So he thinks he's helping those communities, where in reality his policies are creating more and more victims in those communities.
So yeah, we'd love to have him on to see what he thinks.
Fantastic.
And you grew up in LA, right?
I did.
And how is it different today from when you were growing up?
You know, I remember growing up and I would go on the bus when I was 12 or 13 with my friends. And we grew up in West LA and we take the bus to the beach. I wouldn't let my 12 or 13-year-old, now they're older, but back then, get on one of the buses, the subways, or any public transportation nowadays. I mean, I'm sure you've been reading in the media and the news on how people are being stabbed, people are being killed, people are being accosted on the bus and the subway system, the whole metro system in LA County. I mean, it's a different day and age on how you have to live your life nowadays that was different than when I grew up. And again, I'm not looking to bring back the 60s or the 70s or the 80s. I want 2014 back, because that year things were working. The criminals understood there were lines, and if they crossed the lines, there were consequences. The DA was doing her job. It was Jackie Lacey at the time. Law enforcement was doing its jobs, and the criminals understood where the lines were, and for the most part, weren't crossing them. So we need to bring that day and age back.
And was there a time where you started noticing that LA is changing or things are changing in California?
It took a while from, you know, the Proposition 47 in 2014, 57 in 2016, AB 109, which released state prisoners into local facilities, is after that. And then George Gascon's 2020. So all these things feed on each other, and each year it just gets slightly worse, and then more worse, and then it exponentially gets worse. So yeah, you're not gonna see it, you know, the day after Proposition 47 passes. But 10 years later, we absolutely see it.
Do you worry about LA?
How can you not? One of the reasons I'm actually running is that I refuse to be one of those people who leaves LA. You know, I love living here. I've lived here, I was born here, I grew up here. You know, I'm married now 31 years here. I raised my three kids who are now in their 20s here in LA. I refuse to leave, but I know that I need to fight for what I love. And so what I found as I go up and down this county is there are a lot of people who feel like I do, and a lot of people want to fight. And I say, look, one of the ways you can fight and change what's going on is that I can do it as if I become the DA on day one, is to elect a new DA. In the primary election we just had, you know, the current DA, Gascon, got 25% of the vote. 75% of the people rejected him. That's historic. Those numbers, a DA seeking re-election had never gotten so few votes, ever, because there are an enormous amount of frustration on that 75%. They cut across every political party, Democrat, Independent, Republican, every demographic, Black, white, Asian, Latino, every other type of group, every geographic group in the county, whether it's Long Beach, LA, Lancaster, Santa Monica, or the San Gabriel Valley, the Santa Clarita Valley, or the San Fernando Valley. I mean, that's what makes up the 75% of the people who are angry. They're disappointed. They're tired of living in fear. And they tell me one refrain over and over and over again. Enough is enough. Do something about it. And I'm going to do my best to do that.
Why are so many people leaving California? It wasn't long ago, people from everywhere wanted to move to the Golden State to enjoy a better life. Sadly, the standard of living has been dropping in the past decade. Are you like me and wonder why this is happening? I'm Siamak Karami, host of California Insider. In our film, Leaving California, The Untold Story, I take you an intimate journey of love, loss, tragedy, and hope as residents face the prospect of leaving their beloved state. Everyday people like you tell their stories about why they have to move out of the state even though they don't want to. Experts and policymakers also give insights about what's happening behind the scenes. Together, we get to the root cause of this exodus. Go to leavingcalifornia.com to view the first 15 minutes of the film for free. By watching Leaving California, you can be part of the solution. Again, go to leavingcalifornia.com. Did you ever think it would be like this when you were growing up?
No. When you're young and things are working, you just assume they're going to continue to work. In 2014, when we had that year where safety was as good as it's been in the last 50 years, you assume that the next day is just going to be the same. You know, you sort of take safety for granted, which is a great condition to have in society, where things are working so well that you can take safety for granted and focus on other issues. But it turns out that safety is a fundamental value for people. It's sort of the bedrock of what government promises people. And when that is taken away, and all of a sudden fear replaces safety, you actually realize, wow, I want safety back again, so I can then go do the things in the rest of my life. And that's what we've been experiencing the last couple of years, is that fear has replaced safety for a lot of people out there. And now they want to say, okay, let's find a person that can enact policies, and especially in the DA's office, which is very powerful, that can help bring back safety. And that's my goal by running for DA in this county.
Now, do you think the culture of LA has changed since you grew up?
When it comes to safety, no. Everybody wants safety. You know, again, safety cuts across the political equation. It cuts across the demographic equation. There's no poor or rich person that doesn't want safety. There's no black, white, Latino, Asian person that doesn't want safety for themselves and their family. Now, they want law enforcement to do it justly. They want it to be balanced. They want the punishment to be proportional and smart. I reject mass incarceration, for instance, which didn't work. You know, putting someone in jail for a small crime for 100 years failed. But George Gascon has enacted what they call decarceration policies. You know, this year, policies that let violent and serious offenders out before they've served their full time and don't prosecute them to the full extent of the law on the front end. Those fail. Where I come down is something called the hard middle. And the reason it's hard is it requires experience, and I've got 34 years of criminal justice experience as a prosecutor and a defense attorney to bring to this equation. And it requires you to look at each individual case, case by case, not blanket policies, each case, and look at the defendant's background, the crime committed, the impact on the victim, to determine who the true threats are to our public safety and need to be behind bars, and quite candidly, the ones that aren't. Those are the ones that still have to pay their debt to society if they violated society's laws, but community service, a diversion program, or retribution if they stole something might very well be the appropriate punishment to make sure that these people don't come back into the criminal justice system.
Nathan, do you have any other thoughts for our audience?
Absolutely. So the goal of the criminal justice system is not to fill the prisons to the breaking point. That's actually the failure of the system. The goal is to deter people from committing the crime in the first place by having a consistent, fair, impartially enforced law where you know that there are consequences if you commit it. Because the idea is that, particularly for criminals, if you can deter their criminals from committing those crimes in the first place, then you don't have the victims that they would otherwise have to victimize when they commit those crimes. So the success of a criminal justice system, if I'm DA, if I am successful, it would be lowering the crimes in the community by convincing the criminals that I'm serious about enforcing the laws. That is your best recipe for success in creating a safe and incredibly livable and vibrant community throughout all of Los Angeles County.
Nathan Huckman, former federal prosecutor and current DA candidate for LA. It was great to have you on California Insider.
I love being on. Thank you very much.